When you're building a culture of belonging, every word counts. That's why Textio brings the world's most advanced language insights into your hiring and employer brand content. Our industry-leading approach to artificial intelligence and machine learning provides the tools needed to find more diverse candidates. In short, Textio builds more equitable workspaces, guiding businesses and writing more inclusive job posts. And we're building on that success by bringing even more products to the market for all people who share our belief that language matters. Words have power, and at Textio, we harness that power to increase the access and availability of value-driven work for everyone.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to The Break Room. The Break Room is a podcast by Black mental health professionals for Black professionals with the mission to remind you that you matter, you're valuable, and your wellness and joy are priority for liberation. My name is Dr. Jide Bamashigben. I'm a health psychologist as well as a father of two, and I'm married to my beautiful wife. And I'll kick it over to our wonderful co-host, Dr. Nikki.
Hello, hello, hello. I am Dr. Nikki. I am a licensed psychologist and SciPac credentialed, which basically means I'm licensed in the state of Texas, but I am able to do telehealth, virtual therapy, if you will, in about 26 other states. And so if you are interested in working with me, I am a therapist whose practice focuses on Black folks' relational and sexual wellness, as well as around racial stress and racial trauma. And then on the other side of my business, I do racial equity training and consultation with small to mid-sized organizations. And I am so excited to be here again with you all so we can just get into this tea. If you're new to The Break Room, what we always do is start with a little sip of tea because we're in The Break Room, right? So what we got today, Jide? What's going on with the tea today?
So our tea for today is about Nia Long. Not really about Nia Long, but it's related to Nia Long, you know. She is engaged to the coach for the Celtics. His name is Ime Udoka, a Black man, who was just at the NBA Finals in the last playoffs, okay? In 2022, This man was like fighting Finals. Yes, right? And, you know, young coach, like up-and-comer, you know, good-looking guy, you know, we're all rooting for Coach Ime, you know, coach. And recently, he was suspended for the entire upcoming season. And everybody's like, what? Like, a head coach being suspended for an entire season? What's happening? And the news has come out that I guess on he was having
why are you stumbling, Jide? What was he doing?
I know I'm trying to find the specific words. I was gonna say extramarital, but they're not married, so it's not extramarital, right? But an affair with a woman who was working for the Celtics as well, in some capacity. The details have not really been cut out on it. But perhaps there may be harassment related to it. It's unclear. A lot of the facts are unknown to us. So I want to point that out, that I'm just sharing what I know as of this date. But a lot of facts are unknown.
Allegedly.
But this isn't really about him. This is about Nia Long. Allegedly. This is about Nia Long. Okay? Because I saw a tweet that said, like, Nia Long has 100% Black approval rating. Okay? Like, this is the wrong person to do this to.
Absolutely.
You know, Boys in the Hood, you know, Love Jones, right? Classic movies, great person who we know about, has been around, has been a positive person in the Black community for 30 years at this point, you know? And
she's a known entity. She's known and verified. She's known and verified. This dude thought he was above it.
We don't know you.
You're not known and you're not verified. And he really thought he was above it.
So we're really struggling with this. He really did. Mm-hmm. So that's the tea, and I'm excited to see where this goes if we get more information about it. you know, because as of now, a lot of the details are still very, very sketchy. But I'd be very interested to know what exactly happened. But me and I hope you know what's most important is we're all rooting for you.
We are rooting for you. Let me ask, was there allegations around actual relations or was it just insinuated relations? That's the part that was unclear to me. And in part because the Adam Levine controversy came out at the same time where we know he was all out of pocket in other people's DMs. Could you imagine? Could you imagine being the front man for internationally known rock band and your game is that weak? So I kind of got him confused. I didn't know the email person had actually had relations, or was it just that there was some quote unquote harassment in the workplace? That's the part that I'm unclear about.
From my understanding, they had a consensual affair, mm-hmm. Ime and this anonymous Celtic staffer. They had an affair, and like people knew about it even up in June. Mm-hmm. But more recently, maybe there was unwanted contact, verbal contact mm-hmm. from Ime to this person, mm-hmm. and that triggered mm-hmm. an investigation. And also something we have to keep in mind is just now there's also been a lot more attention to like the abuse of women in sports. So like Robert Sarver, the owner, or I guess he's going to be now the former owner of the Suns, is going to sell his team because they just did an investigation and found that he was creating like a hostile work environment for, you know, for women and was saying the N word and, you know, doing stuff like that. So it's all within this context, but that's my understanding.
Oh, well. That's all I will say about that.
Oh, well.
I don't know why men throughout history have not learned that penis will get you in more trouble than anything else. If y'all could just learn to control that. We digress.
The thing that I don't think that women understand is that you're not even thinking anymore. You know, like really, 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 like you're not like, and this is not as a way to escape accountability because we're all adults and y'all got to take responsibility for your actions. So I don't want to remove that. But like the thought process that's going, just like when you're depressed, right? Your thought process is not working the right way. Right? When you're anxious, your thought process isn't working the right way. When you have OCD, you're not thinking the right way, you know, like.
Can they just compare male sexual
empires have fallen?
Yeah, just compare male sexual arousal to impaired mental capacity. Okay, that's what I needed today for that. We're gonna leave it right there today.
Yeah.
And so today, y'all. Yeah. I can't wait to hear the comments about this one. I will be chuckling about this for the rest of the week. But today we wanted to talk about something way more serious. And talk about the impact of trauma on our ability to sort of navigate challenging experiences or conflicts in the workplace. Mm-hmm. And which is complete like 180 from the conversation we were just having. But so, you know, the reality is we've learned so much more in the field, the practice of psychology with regard to our neuropsychology and really brain-based behavior therapies that most of us have experienced trauma at some point in our development. And it has not been named, right? So we used to think about trauma, big T, as like some particular major event that you've experienced that has caused an impairment in your ability to regulate your emotions, stay in the present moment, recognize real threat from perceived threat, a variety of other things that get associated with trauma response. But what we're now able to sort of recognize is that we can have some people call it small T trauma, right? So not an event, right? So we could think about a car accident or someone having something violent happen to them, or sexual assault, right? Or being a combat veteran, right? We think about those as sort of like big T traumas. But when you unpack what a trauma is, it really is that you have had an experience or series of experiences that are beyond your ability to emotionally and psychologically comprehend and regulate. And so some need, some psychological need of safety has been threatened outside of your control. And you have had limited resources to be able to navigate that, right? So if you look at that as a framework for trauma, then it's a pretty easy jump to recognize that a lot of Black folks have trauma of some sort that we're working through. Some of it may be intergenerational trauma, because, you know, we are the descendants of enslaved folks or colonized folks. And some of it may be the results of trauma because of systemic racism, right? So either we grew up in a context where we had limited resources, whether that be financial, physical, psychological, right? Some of our basic needs were not attended to in an optimal way. And then being out in the world, particularly Black folks that are in professional settings, Black folks that are in closer proximity on a regular basis to whiteness, those are all contexts that can facilitate the experience of trauma. And so the more I learn about just my own experience and going through my own therapy process, the more I work with other Black women clients and Black men clients who are experiencing racial stress in the workplace, usually I can sort of go back and figure out that there was some significant emotional or psychological need that did not get met that has resulted in an impairment. So that's what we want to talk about today. Like, okay, so if all of us are walking around just carrying a little bit of trauma around, right? And some of us obviously, right, have more complex experiences than others. What does that mean when you show up in the workplace with all of that? What does that look like, G-Day?
For me, so I immediately think of two profiles of people who come into a workplace with trauma, black people in particular. And I know where I stand in this, and I'm not saying any particular person stand in this, but these are just two. There is the hyperreactive person, and then there's the never reactive person. So the hyperreactive person interprets everything as a threat, right? So essentially you view every single thing as a threat. Oh my God, my boss said this, but did they really mean this? Are they treating me the same way as they're treating everybody else? Are they, you know, just kind of every single thing. They're worried, oh my God, I don't know. Versus the never reactive, and this is where I mostly am, is just, you know, maybe at some point in your life you've just learned, you just gotta sit there and take it. You just gotta bear through it, because if you try to fight it or... It is what it is. right?
I think that's a perfect
so you just
assessment.
Have to sit and bear through it.
It's a perfect assessment, because what we know is that there are four basic trauma responses. There's fight, flight, freeze, or fawn. And what you just described is like, so when we think about fight, most people have heard fight or flight, right? So when we think about the hyper reactive person that you've described, that's, you know, most often fight, but it could also be flight, right? Sometimes you can I had somebody say to me recently, I'm the star player of team too much, right? Right, so you could either be aggressive you could be aggressive, so that's that fight. And that does not necessarily mean a physical fight, but it means that you have a reactivity towards aggression or to hearing things as a threat and responding as such. Or I think sometimes the flight can look like, you know what? I'm going to catastrophize the situation and I'm going to run and figure out what else I need to do or try to get away or avoid, et cetera, right? And then we have the freeze or the fawn. So fawn means F-A-W-N. It means I'm going to lay here and play dead. That's what the fawn is, right? So yeah. That's essentially like don't start none, won't be none. Like, whatever. Like, I just won't react or engage. And freeze can be, you know, the situation of just not saying anything at all. So I think your description actually fits perfectly with how things happen and how things show up for us, generally speaking. And so the question is, what do we do about that in the workplace? If we know that about ourselves, I'm sorry, let me back up and make that clear. Those are not functional states for us to be in all the time, right? So we all can have those responses, and we should, in particularly dangerous situations, but that should not be a steady state. So we can't constantly be in fight. We can't constantly be in freeze. We can't constantly be in fawn. Because we know some people
do. And the reason why is because those are signs of stress, okay? And we're not supposed to... And stress is... Like, we're supposed to be a little bit stressed, you know? Like, if you're not stressed, you're dead. That's true. But you cannot constantly be in states of stress. It's not good for your body. It's not good for your mind. It's not good for you, period.
It is not. I always talk about, like, I think about chronic stress as separate from stress. It's like, okay, your car, you can drive your car. It can accelerate when you need to pass someone. But if you kept it in a constant state of acceleration, that motor is going to burn out real quick, right? So we're not supposed to be in this constant state of distress. So I bet as I'm talking about this, everybody's listening can think about maybe even themselves, so we're not naming names, or people that they work with where they're like, oh, that's what that is. That's why she always popping off, or that's why he never has an opinion about things, right? And so what I want to offer is sometimes we externalize the issue, right? So we say it's about the people I work with, or it's about the work culture, it's about the expectations. And sometimes it's about us. Now, I'm not giving an excuse or pass for all the racial shenanigans that we know exist and we talk about a great deal, and frankly, on the work, in the break room that happened in the workplace. But the question is, at what point do you become accountable for self-regulation and accountable for your own health and well-being and how you show up in the world of work?
That's a hard balance, you know. But part of being an adult is realizing that your safety is your responsibility. Mm. Point blank.
Say that again, G Day. That's a word for the people.
Nobody else's.
Say that again. That's a word.
Your safety is your responsibility.
Absolutely. That is such a critical.
Physical safety, psychological safety. It's yours.
It is yours. That is the function of being an adult for me, right? And lots of adults are walking around who have had an unfair deck of cards, of cards of life stacked against them, right? We're not discounting or dismissing that, but ultimately, your responsibility as an adult, as a grown up, is to begin to figure out how to then work with what you have been given, and that means being accountable for your health, your well-being, your sense of safety. I have a saying where I said, I am my own psychological safety, right? Same thing that you're saying. No one else can make me feel safe. No one else can make me feel fill in the blank. I have to create my own safety for myself. So this is just a little bit of a motivation for you to think about what is your contribution to any interaction that you're having. Like, if you're experiencing conflict everywhere you go, or if everywhere you go, you can't speak up for yourself, and that's causing you issues, right? It's, you're not getting the outcome that you would like to have happen. While it doesn't absolve any of the other factors in those workplace experiences, I always tell you to start with yourself and doing your own self-awareness, self-reflection, and self-analysis.
And even, you know, we're talking about this in the context of trauma, but even being the type of person who does that, like, I'm very much a walk away kind of person, because that's how my father raised me. If something going on and something don't look right, you see some conflict going down, walk away. get as far away from it as possible. And yeah. That's actually good advice, especially for a young black man growing up in America. Like,
yes, see something that, not right, I mean, to keep you alive.
Because to, you know, keep me alive, to keep me out of trouble, but also at the same time, there come times in your life where you have to stop and say something. You know, yes. Where you have to let people know you're not treating me right. And you gotta find your voice. So it's really difficult. It's something I still struggle with. Both you, Dr. Nikki, and Zach Nunn, you know, our fearless living corporate leader, are always pushing me to be like, nah, no, you gotta say something. Like I'll text y'all the story. You're like, Gina, you have to say something.
And sometimes we'd be like, Gina, you gonna say this.
Yes,
right? Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. I really appreciate you sharing that in this space too, because one, I think it's really important, because what you just shared is almost the antithesis of the stereotype of a black man in the workplace. The stereotype of a black man in the workplace is that you are aggressive, that you are a threat. And so anything that you do to even minimally advocate for yourself is blown out of proportion, right? So this is the contextual part that we want to keep in mind. And so what that means is there can be a reinforcement of some of your patterns of behavior that might not be helpful to you, because if the consequences the consequences outweigh the behavior, right? So like if you do step up or you are perceived as being a threat, that's not good for you. Like you got bills to pay, kids to feed, all of that stuff, right? And so there's a reinforcing act. And this is why the self-awareness, self-analysis part really becomes important, right? So that, you know, you even bringing it to us and us giving you that feedback is part of the process to say, okay, this ain't working for me.
Right.
It's not working for me in this situation. This feels untenable. So I got to figure out another way to do this, right? So when we say, is it a trauma response? The reality is all of us got some sort of trauma response that we're using. It's what we have created as a form of coping. And the question I always ask is, how is it working for you now? Is it functional? Because it was functional. Your father's advice to you, GDA, was functional. When you see some bullshit, you turn around and go the other way, because I want you to come home at the end of the day. I want you to be safe. I don't want you caught up in the criminal justice system. I don't want your life taken, like none of that stuff. So that was extremely functional and came from a place of love, care, and compassion. But now, as one of the other things that we talk about a lot as psychological healthy, as psychological health, is having an array of options, right? And so now we want to think about,
right,
what are the other ways that we can engage with conflict? What are the other ways that we can navigate challenges in the world outside of just having one response? So that would be one of the things that I would tell you to think about too. Is it a trauma response? Maybe, if you only have one way of handling things.
Yeah.
If you always out the gate popping off and you don't have any other resources, that might be a trauma response, right?
Yeah.
So we're going to always advocate for therapy, for support. If it's not therapy, for support. But the first thing you always have to do is name it. Don't shame it. So you got to name it and figure out what other ways to deal with it. Because the reality is we will always acknowledge the impact of systemic oppression as real and alive and well in the workplace, and we are individuals in relationship to other individuals at work, and so we have to think about how we create our own safety, how we regulate ourselves, how we make sure we take care of ourselves to get our needs met, and that is no one's responsibility but your own.
That's it. Hard truth of adulthood.
It really, really is. It really, really is. And sometimes I just don't want to. Sometimes I don't want to be the grown up.
Right.
Can somebody else come grown up for me, please? Because I don't want to do it today.
Listen, I'm tired of it. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Exactly. And that's the thing today about the fawn. The thing about the fawn is that sometimes, at some point, sometimes that fawn loses all its capacity. The battery is at zero, and then y'all go from zero to 100. Folks need to be worried about the fawn.
It's true.
Because at some point,
it's true.
Y'all gonna catch these verbal hands.
And that is the downside to always holding it in, not saying something. What happens is it's gonna come out at some point, right? Mm-hmm. But it might come out at, you know, the person at the grocery store who's bagging your groceries, and they made one tiny mistake, and you let off a year worth of grievances, you know, and that's not right either.
That person is like, dude, I just asked paper or plastic.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Goodness. So.
Yeah.
What's your last nerve for the day, G-Day? What else you got to say for the people?
So our last nerve for today. Okay. So recently, a black woman or a black female student at University of Southern California, USC, decided to start a majorettes squad team, you know. So usually, you know, it's people who kind of like move alongside with the band, kind of dance to the music, kind of like cheerleaders, I would say. It's like a close.
It's going to be majorettes all over the country listening to this podcast and just shaking their head and like, why are you describing majorettes like that?
I'm trying to give this is so for people to have an assessment who have no idea what a majorette is. Right? I'm just trying to give you a little description so you can have an idea of it. Kind of like a cheerleader. It's not a cheerleader, or else they'd be cheerleaders, but they're called majorettes.
Majorettes are way better than cheerleaders.
Agree. Okay. No question there. But that's they're the closest cousin, you know?
that's the closest cousin, I'd say.
So a black woman started one at USC, and she's received a lot of pushback on, you know, social media, because there's people who say or feel that majorettes is a HBCU tradition. Okay, it's a tradition for black people at historically black colleges and universities. And so to start one at a predominantly white institution is kind of a slap in the face or spit in the face of, you know, black people and majorettes at HBCUs. I think that assessment is off base, okay? So it gets on my nerves, right? You know, I think that assessment is off base. You know, it's an all-black team, so it started a team of all-black people. It's a stretch, right? It's not, it'd be one thing if they came into this space and had an all-white team. It'd be a totally different story if this is white people. Entirely different story if this is white people. But it's black people and it's a black team. I looked on the, you know, on the internet, and I looked at a picture, and I was like, oh, it's like black girls. Like, it's a bunch of black girls. Like, this is what I would think of a majorette. So, you know, I feel like there's just a level of gatekeeping that's happening that is not quite the right, the most important gate at this moment. You know, like I'm just kind of like, I don't think this is where we need to be focusing our attention as black people on social media about a black girl who wanted to start a black dance team at her university. Right. She's trying to create or mimic that space in her own space that is lacking this diversity and lacking these people who look like you. So to sit there and, look, you know, talk down on her.
As long as Clarence Thomas is on the Supreme Court, we got bigger fish to fry as black people. Like, come on now.
You're right.
We got way bigger fish to fry, right? There's a part of me that understands that there are certain black cultural experiences and phenomenon that we want to continue to hold sacred, and we want to keep it safe for us. But it doesn't sound like that's what is happening. I could see if there was a white girl starting a white majorette team at USC, then I might be, you know, team sit down for that one. But there's no charter, there's no contract that says majorettes are limited to HBCUs. Like, that's not a thing. We at got all. Listen, y'all better figure out how we gonna keep our democracy going. Y'all better figure out how we can continue to build Black economic sustainable wealth. Like, we got bigger fish than fried than majorettes.
Is Clarence Thomas the worst Black person ever? I'd say yes.
You know what? But you know what, G-Day? Somebody said the other day, he's the most powerful Republican in the country. And I was like, what? And they were like, he has a lifetime appointment. That's more powerful than any other office that can be held. And if his crazy ass wife, that gives his wife sway. That's the reason why Jenny Thomas is able to send some old crazy ass paranoid tweets. Text messages and have them be taken seriously, because he has substantial power and he's trash.
He's awful. I think he's the worst Black person ever. And I think because he's the most powerful Republican ever, that's what makes him the worst Black person ever.
I don't have too much pushback on that argument. I don't do it.
I want a ranking of the other four worst. Like, I think probably Bill Cosby's up there, because he made us think. We got to do that. So I'm going to stop right now. I'm going to.
That's what I was just going to say. No, we're going to say that. That is a conversation for a full podcast. Let's rank the five worst Black people of all time. We had to keep it. We had to keep it continental to the U.S.
Yeah.
Because there have been some dictators on the continent that are really, really awful. So we're gonna rank one of the five worst Black people in American history. I love it. I look forward to it. Thank you all for joining us here on today's episode of The Break Room. We hope that we always bring you a balance of intelligent education and pure tomfoolery. That is our contribution to your mental health on a weekly basis. We're going to definitely give you a chuckle as well as something to think about to help improve your overall mental wellness. And I feel like we've succeeded today. So until next time, go check us out on any place where you hear podcasts. Catch up. We got a catalog. And welcome.
Thank you so much. Hope you have a good one.
Living Corporate is brought to you by Doximity. Over 90% of graduating medical students join Doximity to use our tools before earning their doctoral degree. As medicine's largest network, there's an elevated level of responsibility to everything we do. We don't take that responsibility lightly and are committed to working towards a more equitable world inside and beyond our virtual office walls. If you want to learn more about Doximity, make sure you go to your app store, type in DOXIMITY. That's DOXIMITY.